Thank you, Sandra. All right. You guys ready for this? All right. It is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Joelle with 7 years sober.
I'm Joelle, and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, Daniel, I'm going to move the microphone. My sobriety date is April 21st of 2009. I thank Bill for inviting me here. I've been here before, a few years back, so, you know, the story, it evolves over time. Any of you working the steps, you know that. So hopefully no one will compare this to that story, you know, because my knowledge changes. So I've decided I'm going to start on the happiest day of my life. And I want to let you know that my husband is sitting right here at the front table, and he knows what I'm about to say. The very happiest day of my life so far was graduation from high school. Okay? Not a cloud on the horizon. I did not drink through high school. I was that awful person at the party when you were already having fun, going around saying, you know, you're underage. You shouldn't be drinking. You know, that I'm never going to drink. Drinking gets in the way of getting your goals. And when I graduated from high school, I found out for the first time what a true escape artist I was. So I wasn't drinking yet, but I had already switched high schools my junior year of high school, and that's my second happiest day of my life to that point. And basically, you know, I had, you know, this idea that I was going to go off to college. I'd learned to trade services for appreciation already. I had figured out already girls were the problem, boys were the solution. And I just thought there's no cloud on the horizon. I'm going to go off to college and I'm going to, you know, get a degree in engineering and I'm going to own the world. And what actually happened is I went off to a major university. One of the only good things that came out of me learning early to use others, you know, trade services, was that I got pretty good grades. I really was into having teachers give me appreciation, so I pretty much did whatever they said. And but the thing was, the grades weren't quite good enough to get into the university of my choice in time to get housing. So I went up to this college, you know, a few days after graduation from high school, and immediately ran into a snag with trying to find a place to live. And thank God I had this gal I had just barely met, so she didn't hate me yet. And she said, you know, there are these women on campus, they have this beautiful house, and all you have to do is go to dinner with them once, and you can move into that house. And I said, okay. And the next thing you know, I went over to their house for dinner one night, and I moved into their house, and I thought, this is perfect, you know, I'm a really studious person, and all I want to do at college is study. And the next thing you know, a few months go by, oh, by the way, the rules of the house, no drinking. I don't want to deal with anybody who was, like, drinking or partying. I hated those people. And a few months later, I'm told by my big sister in this place that the next night is initiation. And I'm saying, well, okay. And she's saying, and you're either going to drink or you're going to go back to Oakland where you were living. Well, it took me about, I don't know, 30 seconds. How long would it have taken you to go, well, I guess I'm going to drink? And, you know, the thing about me is I really believed I'd never drink. But, you know, the minute that it's put to me that I have something to gain from drinking and something to lose from not drinking, I just changed my mind just like that. And when initiation night came, I started drinking room to room. And the only thing I remember is that in the very first room, first time I've ever drank outside my parents' home, even though I was raised Catholic, it's not like I never tasted alcohol before. But the only thing I remember is I drank directly out of a bottle. thinking, like, how uncivilized, you know? They're passing a bottle around. Thank God I'm not a germaphobe. So I remember taking that bottle and taking a slug, and then the next morning I woke up. That is God's truth. I have no idea what happened that night, except that next morning, just like I always did, I got up, I felt great. I had no memory of anything, and I walked into the kitchen, and all of a sudden, everybody started whooping and hollering, like, we didn't think we were going to see you, and pretty soon these stories of singing and dancing. I don't sing. I don't dance. So, oh, yes, you do sing and dance. I'm kind of standing there. You know, the first time that you hear that about yourself, you know, you don't know what to think. You know, like, what happened? They're like, oh, yeah, you tap dance. You tap dance like crazy. I'm like, well, I took tap dancing till eighth grade. They're like, you tap danced on that table last night. You are the star of next year's Rush play. You know, that did not go well because there was no drinking in Rush. But that's what happened. So, of course, like any reasonable, sane person, I said, I'm never drinking again. But I'll tell you something. Before I said that, I said, my gosh, these girls like me. That's the first time. So, it was all the way till the next Thursday before I started again. You know, I quit and quit and quit drinking. I quit drinking a million times. The problem is I always started again. That's how it works for me. And I had to, at that moment, I had no idea why I drank like that. I had no idea why I blacked out like that. I didn't even know that was a blackout till you guys told me when I got in the room 23 years later. So what happened for me is I had enough drive in college to limit my drinking to Thursday and Friday. And I picked a major that for me was just like, it put me way out on the edge of my comfort zone. And through high school, since I didn't connect with girls, and we all understand I didn't really connect with boys, I had learned to connect with academic material. You know, that's really where my connection was. So during college, you know, that kind of saved me. And I drank Thursday and Friday, and I studied my rear end off the rest of the time. And I found the man of my dreams who's sitting at that table. And still not a cloud on the horizon. Because I think everybody I knew in college did like that. They drank like that. It didn't seem like any problem at all. You know, the people who had a problem, they didn't graduate. So I figured, I'm good. I found the man of my dreams. Now I'll quit drinking, I'll get a job, and I'll be the CEO, just like I always planned. And what happened is, it was inexplicable to me. I got out. I had a child, got married, had a child. And I changed my drinking. Most of us probably ramp up in our drinking. Not me. I was in college, so I was drinking for free. Well, it wasn't free, but I was drinking without paying for my alcohol with money. And I was drinking doubles and Long Island iced teas and, you know, whatever anybody gave me, I was drinking. But when I got out and I realized how much it cost, I'm not cheap. I'm just frugal. And I switched to cheaper alcohol. And so what happened with me is I switched pretty much right away to beer. But then eventually I decided, well, you know, I should probably drink wine. And then, you know, and I got drunk on beer. And so when I switched to wine, I added 7-Up to it. You know, I kept trying to find a way, just like we read in More About Alcoholism. In fact, when I got into the program, and my sponsor had me reading and reading and reading and reading, trying to figure out if I had a fuzzy brain or if my brain was ready to start working some steps. And one day I called her up after reading that intro to chapter 3 that we just read, and I told her, I never tried brandy. And she said, it wasn't a suggestion. And I was like, oh. I did all those other things, you know, so it's just like there was one glaring misstep I took. So, you know, and all I can tell you is I haven't tried brandy yet. Because what we all know is once we get in here and we get a brain full of alcoholic, You know, if I decide to not do today what I did for the last 7 years day by day, you know, who knows? Brandy may be on the table again. I don't know. But what I do know is what happened with me is my drinking didn't change when I married, and it didn't change when I had my first child, and it didn't change when I had my second child, and it didn't change when I had three more children, except for it progressed. It progressed. Pretty much my pattern of drinking was, at first anyway, I didn't have to drink every single day, but the thing was, I had to drink till the alcohol was all gone. All of it. Everything gone. So, you know, this wasn't too bad. You know, I could kind of limit what I bought, and I'm one of those hiders. I had this little pattern of going around to liquor stores, and you know, I'd go to this one on Monday, and this one on Tuesday, and this one on Wednesday. I think I cared more about whether the liquor store attendants knew I was drinking than whether my kids knew. My kids, in the course of this time, they went to public school, they went to Catholic school, they went to home school. I'm a devout Catholic. I came in the program Catholic. You know, Catholicism did a lot for me. It still is doing a lot for me. I'm still Catholic, but it didn't solve my drinking problem. I drank all the way through, going to Mass every Sunday and going to confession and doing all that stuff. So the reality for me is the illness kept progressing, and I had no idea why. I really believed I lived a charmed life. What did I have to drink about? But it was absolutely irresistible to me. I know now that what I did for 23 years is chase that effect I got the first time I drank. You know, that secondary unconscious craving of that first time that I felt a release from having to trade everybody for everything and please everybody with my actions and try to figure out what you wanted and be that for you. And all those things that I was doing at those times through my teenage years and in my 20s, that what drinking did is it gave me a release that I didn't even know I needed. And I couldn't have told you I needed it. You know, but what ended up happening is in my late 20s, I started to realize I really wanted to quit drinking. And I would quit, you know, I'd quit for a week or a month. At first, I could quit for a few months. But then I would just find myself drinking again. It wasn't a planned thing. My husband would come home from work and he'd go, "You're drinking again." And I'd be like, "Yep, I guess I am." So eventually, I ended up staying home with the five kids, and through prayer, you know, I had a religious experience in my church that allowed me through prayer to discern that the kids should go back into the school system and not be home with me as their primary educator. Tip there. And what ended up happening is I have four boys and a girl, and my girl is formidable. My boys are pretty much pushovers. They're like my husband. They're wonderful. They're wonderful. They're kind and gentle. And guess what? My girl's pretty much like me. She's kind of forceful and like gung-ho and in your face. And, you know, if you don't give her what she wants, you are going to find out. And what happened is when those older two children went into their teens, you know, they weren't connecting with me enough. And I'm just going to backtrack just a little back into my childhood. You know, I was born into a family as the third of five kids. But when I was born, it was punishment to my father for moving her to Fresno. And she was deeply depressed. Why? Because she wanted to be the CEO. And there was no further education in her mind and no CEO. So guess what she was going to do? Have two more kids. That'll show him. And I was the first of those two kids. So being born into that, you know, I was at home with an at-home parent, being raised by someone who was really severely depressed. And they didn't want to connect the way that, I don't know, do any of you feel like this? I'm a connector. You know, I am a sensitive person. And I, deep down, when I was a child, I wanted to connect with people. So how I get to graduating from high school thinking, I'm just going to run over you all, your obstacles to my will, you know, that's another story. But what happened for me is that lack of connection, it left me kind of wounded. And I kind of wrote off people. I specifically wrote off my parents in sixth grade. But that's not how I remembered it. At 18, I said I lived a charmed life and my growing up years were perfect. So I really had lived such a double life and lied so much I didn't know who I was. So fast forward, now I've got a daughter who's really angry with me. I'm demanding that she connect with me, and she's 18 and she's connecting with her phone. You know, she's connecting with her friends by text, and she's doing, and we all have kids, and we all know that this is normal teenage behavior, but you know, as an alcoholic, I could not accept it. As an active alcoholic, I was demanding from her that she give me what I want, because I was completely self-centered. You know, I didn't see it that way. How I saw it is she owed me that. And I would get in fights with her pretty much on a daily basis, and the only way I would avoid the fights is if I was drunk when she got home. And many, many times, that's what she came home to. So she did not know that that was my state, because as we all do, I'd built a tolerance up and I could act pretty. I could get dinner on. That wasn't a problem. I could clean up dinner. And they just figured I was a person who passed out early and went to bed. You know, I'm just not a night person. But the reality is, she accused me when she decided to throw down the gauntlet and leave our home. She accused me in front of my husband of emotionally withholding myself from her. And she was in a fit, and she after telling me that, she stormed out of the house and she never moved back. So she was a person of her word. And it caused me, because my main feeling about what she said is, I wish I could have said that to my mother, but I was never brave enough. And I said, you know, that's probably not a coincidence. So what ended up happening is, through a nervous breakdown, I quit alcohol. I came into the rooms of AA, and I want to at least mention, it was a love at first sight for me, no offense. You know, I came into the rooms of AA and I ran screaming a couple of times, but thank God I remembered, you know, a couple years earlier, somebody I knew from another venue telling me, hey, they were sober for 10 years in AA. So they decided they were going to take me to all the best meetings, and guess what the best meetings were? Women's meetings. And women, you know what? One of the best gifts I've gotten, I told these gals, it's so fun to be up on the stage with all women. I don't know why it's that way, men. But what happened to me in AA, one of the things that happened is I found that trustworthy woman who'd spoken up about AA years before. And she was willing to take me to meeting after meeting after meeting until I told her, I'm never going to another meeting with you. I hate women. But I still like you. Will you be my sponsor? And she said she would. So at this point, I'd given up alcohol, and I'm just trying to find a way to want to live without it. You know, the truth is, I went to those AA meetings with my sponsor, and one of the things they said is the only requirement for AA membership is... I told my sponsor, I don't qualify. I don't want to quit drinking. I don't have a desire to stop drinking. She goes, do you have a desire to stop drinking? I told her, okay, yeah. Dang it. You know, I'm always looking for a way out. That's who I am, fundamentally. So what happened is I ended up going to that place that some of us get where, you know, the book says eventually we'll go to insanity or alcoholic death. And I was lying in bed after my nervous breakdown. I couldn't work, but it was worse than not working. I couldn't homeschool anymore. I couldn't go to Walmart shopping. I was just filled, riddled with anxiety without alcohol. I had been masking that anxiety. I never knew that. But basically, I couldn't do anything, and I lay in that bed, and I decided, that's it. I don't want to live without alcohol. And I know exactly what to do. I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And then I stopped. I was alone in the house. And I did that fancy prayer that some of us have found works when nothing else will. I've memorized the third step prayer. I've memorized the seventh step prayer. I've memorized the serenity prayer. But the one that I can usually get out when I really need to pray is, help. And what ended up happening is I found myself outside walking down the street. And my little 11-year-old, he's my fourth, he asked me, Mom, can I walk with you? No clue anything's wrong, even though I've gone through a nervous breakdown and I can no longer shop and my husband and my brother are treating me like I'm an invalid. I said, okay. So he's riding around on this skateboard thing, and I'm looking at him in the sun, and I'm remembering that just a few minutes ago, I just wanted to end it. And I go, you know what? I am freaking insane. And that's when I remembered Frances, my first sponsor, and I called her up. And she started taking me to those meetings. When I finally told her, I'm not going to any more meetings with you, but you can be my sponsor. You know, I still have a lot of those defects, but at least I know now. I went to my first co-ed meeting. And at my very first co-ed meeting, they had all these rules they're reading. I'm like, when are they going to get to the meeting part? There's all these rules, you know, you only, like, kind of like here, kind of like every AA meeting. Oh, you know, only these people can speak, and those people need to identify themselves. And one of the rules at this meeting was, no volunteers can speak. So don't volunteer. Doesn't matter. They get to the end of the meeting. They got like 2 minutes left, and I guess the secretary or whatever was new, and he says, any burning desires? Now, I don't know where you guys come from, but where I come from, that's asking for volunteers. And thank God he did that, because it was a defects meeting, and I freaking hated defects meetings back then because I have all those defects. And what happened is a guy piped up, and he didn't share on defects. He said, I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic. And when I was 11 years old, I came home and my only parent, my mom, was hanging in the garage. And then he burst into tears. And then he said, I have no idea why I just said that. And I was hooked. That was my home group for 3 months. Now, I'm a perennial home group switcher. So, you know, if you don't have resentment against an AA meeting, you are not going to enough AA meetings. I can tell you that with certainty. Okay? So, but for 3 months, I went to that meeting every day. Because I heard my higher power reach out to me. You know, I read those 12 steps on the wall. And I mean, I know people balk at four, but I'm Catholic. You know, we do that confession thing, and you know, you just do that confession thing. So that didn't, four did not bother me. Oh my gosh, six? You know, it's bad enough. I already gave up alcohol. Now you want me to give up my defects too? There'll be nothing left of me. I mean, I am not doing six. I'll crawl at four and five. You know, we're all different. But thank God the steps are in order. And what ended up happening is, my sponsor, what actually ended up happening is, I almost went out. I went to Mass. I was still kind of a daily masser. And one day I went to Mass, and to this moment I can't tell you what happened. But something happened, and I got pissed. And I was probably about, maybe 30 days at most. And I stormed out of Mass, and I went straight back to the liquor store. And it was 7:45 a.m., that's when Mass is. And I walked in there and I grabbed a 12-pack or 6-pack of Bud Light. I can't remember. I think it was a 6-pack of bottles. That's what it was. And I put it on the counter and the guy said, hey, where you been? I said, I've been in AA. He said, welcome back. I paid for the beer and I left. And I don't know if it was that interaction, but all of a sudden, an alarm went off in my head. I'm supposed to call my sponsor before I drink. No problem. She was not a morning person. So I pull out her number, which is at the top of a list of 10 people that she made me make. If anybody offered me their phone number in the rooms of AA, any woman, men, not the men, I had to put it on this list until I had 10 phone numbers. So I called her number, no answer. I leave her a message. It just says, hi. That's it, whole message. Then I call a second number, no answer. Third number, no answer. Fourth number, no answer. I pause. I say to myself, maybe I don't want to drink. Fifth number, no answer. Sixth number, woman answers. Who is this? I said, this is Joelle, and you don't know me, but I know your name. Your name's Jill, and I met you at this meeting. And she goes, I don't remember. Why are you calling me? I said, well, I just went into my old liquor store and I bought a six-pack of beer and I'm sitting in the parking lot and it's sitting on my seat and I remembered I was supposed to call my sponsor, but she slept in. She goes, okay, you kind of broke relatives in the neighborhood who drink too much. I said, how did you know? She said, start the car, but leave the phone on. So I start the car. She goes, okay, how close are you? I said, less than half a mile. She goes, okay, are you there yet? I go, yeah, I'm there. What do I do now? She goes, pick up the beer and walk to the front door and ring the doorbell. And when he answers, you just hand him the beer and don't say anything. And then just walk back to the car and then we'll talk. How easy was that? What? I walk up to the door. I ring the doorbell. My relative answers the door. I hand him the six-pack of beer. He's on a phone call with work. He can't say anything. I don't say anything. I just go back. I get in my car. I just follow instructions. I get back in the car, and I say, okay, I did it. She said, how do you feel? I said, I feel great. She said, what are you going to do next? I said, I think I'm going to just go back to Mass. She said, great. See you around the rooms. I called my sponsor 2 hours later and I told her, I don't care how fuzzy my brain is, we got to work the steps. We got to work the steps. So what happened for me is I started running in steps. My sponsor, she was tired. She was really suffering from some medical conditions. And so she was trying to put me off. So the first thing she said, write down every single name of every person you've ever known, starting with birth. I called her back like, you know, an hour and a half later. Seriously. I said, okay, now what? She's like, seriously? I'm like, I don't want to drink again. She said, okay, you know, highlight the ones that you have a weird feeling in your stomach. And then the next one was write a paragraph. Anyway, I had maybe 85 pages of written work on the fourth step because that's just how she led me through it. But I was motivated to go through it. And like I told you already, I didn't have any qualms about the fourth step. But here's what's really awesome. I went to the fifth step, and that sponsor, the way she did it, you got on your fifth step, you had all your paperwork, and she said, tell me your life story. You're in a room with no clock, just snacks and non-alcoholic drinks. And I started telling her my story, and I just went through my story. And then at the end, she said, okay, now look through your sheets and see if you missed anything. Is there anything you forgot to tell me? And I told her no. And I said, okay. And she said, okay, you're done with your fifth step. Congratulations. Well, she didn't write out defects for me. She didn't do a lot of things. We all say, oh, you got to do this. You got to do that. And I walked out that door, and it was dark. And we started at 11 a.m. And that's the first day I didn't have a craving at 5 o'clock. And I never had a craving at 5 o'clock ever again. I had a spiritual experience as a result of the fifth step. At 6 months sober, I'm going to quote the foreword of the 12 and 12. I don't know. You know, you guys probably can tell. I'm a little driven. I'm a little hyper. I'm still working on my defects. Thank you. But at 6 months sober, I read that foreword to the 12 and 12 where it says, the 12 steps are spiritual principles which, when practiced as a way of life, we expel the obsession for alcohol and allow us to live happily and usefully whole. And I realized I had no idea what that phrase, AA way of life, meant. I was a secretary at my home group. You know, I was putting my hand out to people, welcoming them to my meeting. But I told my sponsor, I don't know what that means. And she said, God will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. And what happened is, I got my 6 month chip and a guy approached me. And he said, hey, I want you to come speak for me. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever done this, but I must have obsessed over this speaking engagement for about 3 weeks. I planned, you know, like pages, okay? And when I showed up at this panel, there were 11 people and 40 minutes. And I was last because I had 6 months and 4 days or whatever it was, 6 months and 3 weeks. And I don't know what came out because I had about 15 seconds, but I think it's probably the only time I really said what my higher power wanted. And I was hooked. It didn't bother me I got 15 seconds. I told the guy who asked me to speak, I'll do that anytime I am willing. And what ended up happening is I was invited to go to an H&I business meeting. And what do you know? Right at my 2-year point, they needed a panel person to coordinate a panel. And I've been taking panels in on H&I for the last 5 years. And I still do it. And what ended up happening for me is, and I don't know if any of you, I've had a million obsessions. You probably have two, if you're like me. I call them ANDAs because it's like we're alcoholic and I'm an exerciser and I'm a workaholic and I'm a lot of things. I was a boyaholic. Fortunately, I cured that at marriage. That must have been a spiritual experience, but, you know. But the point is, I have had many obsessions, and the obsessions were cured by doing H&I work. And the worst of all the obsessions was the one where I have this little shoulder devil who periodically pops up on my left shoulder and he says, you know what, this AA thing, you don't need it. It's just a phase. You can drink again. You're not really alcoholic. And I'll be darned if every single time that voice pops up, I've got some service commitment in 3 to 5 days. And if I can just get that service commitment out of the way, then I'll quit AA for good. And people say we're quick forgetters like it's a defect, but the truth of the matter is, by the time that service commitment's over, I'm back in, and I'm running with this thing, you know? So for me, services save me. Besides the CAP panel and H&I, I am secretary of Fresno's Intergroup now. That's brand new. But I, you know, coordinated functions in AA. More importantly, the biggest promises that have really come true for me is my relationships with my kids are restored. You know, all 5 kids I have relationships with today, including my daughter. My daughter actually got married last year. She asked me to plan the wedding, and she just basically said, I trust you. I'm in New York. You're in California. You plan it. I'll approve whatever you need. And when she showed up, she was happy. And, you know, these are things that, you know, the intangibles. You know, the truth is, for me, my bottom was emotional. And it was spiritual. I've heard in the program many times that we have an internal spiritual malady. I really believe that desire for connection that I have, that my parents couldn't meet. To be honest, my parents don't have it. They're not alcoholics. That internal spiritual need to connect with another human being, you know, that spiritual malady was addressed by working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, and as I get service commitments like the women's panel that I do now, I run a women's meeting every month. I love women's meetings now. In fact, I love women now. But, you know, those connections that I've gotten through service, they met the need. Of course, the primary meter of those needs is my higher power. But, you know, I think he knows that I need some tangible reminders that I am connected. And so he gives me all of you. I'll tell you, that's what I find at the meetings, too. Now, I just believe all women were liars, cheats, sluts, you know. I thought they were all like me. But the reality is, you know, I've learned through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that if I do the work in the program, I can be honest. I can connect with people in a trustworthy way. I can fulfill the responsibilities I commit to fulfill. And the other women in the program doing the same thing, they can do all those things too. And one of the greatest joys I have had recently is, you know, planning a conference in Fresno. I got tapped by some old-timer who didn't want to do the work, but he had an idea. And he was happy to give me the opportunity to put together a committee and put on a conference. And to be able to run a conference where you have a group of people all able to basically reveal who they are because they're grounded in the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so they're not double wifing everything and masking everything. They are who they are. And this conference, you know, we got right down to the wire on this conference, and we had no decorations committee whatsoever. And I already mentioned, I'm an engineer, and between you and me, we're not great decorators. So I was really kind of panicked. And thank God, another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a man, I think, who really took me at my word and realized I could not decorate, called me up out of the blue and said, I got someone for you. And this woman, who I hardly know, to this moment I hardly know her, she called me, she came over 10 days before the event. I told her I have no budget and the desire to have the decorations beautiful. And she probably put 30 hours of work in and transformed the whole event. That's the kind of women who go into Alcoholics Anonymous and work the steps and are willing to work with others and get into service. And I just didn't know those women existed, even though now I do. So I've gotten lots and lots of promises, and I'm really thankful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thankful for the opportunity to speak today, and with that, I'll keep coming back.